Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Mad Jin.
With guest co-host
Silent Knight 13.
The first time back, we haven't recorded for 3 weeks, people probably forgetting who we are, including ourselves. Wait, who am I again?
Yeah, I do a thing on Saturday morning. Wait, what? I don't just sleep in?
Episode what? 190?
Yep.
I don't even know what to say, you know, it's been so long. I missed you guys. Silent Knight 13. I'm returning again after a year. It's been along with the Polycast crew. They're amazing and whatnot. We got Dan Q.
When we reach episode 200, we'll establish a successful connection, okay? Yeah, it's so geek. It's awful. It's nerdy even.
Imagine.
Compensate this.
Makalu.
Apparently Dan was trying to give us the nerdy version of Will Bang, okay?
The Mian Team.
Good morning. Started by Leopoldo. No compensation or loss. GP profits and engineers. An injustice, or a injustice, perhaps, the thread says. During more than one multiplayer game, I've been with my friends when we also use the TeamSpeak room for accurate, friendly communications. We've experienced the situation where one player spends a great engineer on rushing a world wonder, when on that same term another player was finishing the world wonder normally. What seems unfair is that in more than one instance, the player slow building the world wonder was given the world wonder anyway. The player rushed was not. Oh, I see what's going on here.
Aww, violin time.
But it's a tie, right? I mean, if you're going to go into a tie, it's a crapshoot. However, that's not the main complaint, and a different issue if there was a bias towards the slow builder. The complaint issue is if a player slow builds a world wonder, there's a lot of gold compensation. Why is a player who spends a great engineer not afforded the same consideration?
In vanilla, you used to get 200 gold if you use a great engineer and you miss the wonder.
Yeah, you're supposed to get gold equal to the production put in. Well, give or take some, like, really crappy modification downward trend. I know in single player that happens, but maybe in multiplayer something got forgotten.
I was just going to say suck it up, but he does at least need to get the gold.
Yeah.
You essentially did use your engineer on hammers. So those hammers, sir, should be converted back.
At least get 1-to-1 for the engineer hammers, even if you don't get 1-to-1 for the rest of it.
In this particular instance, it should just be taking the single-player mechanics, because it's not really something that would be different for multiplayer. And even with simultaneous turns, nothing actually triggers till the next turn. So yeah, I mean, you really should get gold compensation. I know further in the thread they start talking about no hammer overflow, stuff like that. And Canis actually makes a good point. Notification for fail gold probably doesn't appear in multiplayer since it's the same kind of message as the runes, as in you will have a brief flash on your screen, not an actual notification if you get gold from runes. And that could be the same way. Because I know in single player, it's also a little brief flash. You don't get a full on notification about how much gold you got. So it could be something along that line that you're just not getting notified. And maybe the money is still there. Unless, of course, they were paying attention to it. And obviously, no gold is there, but still.
There should definitely be money. And notification, I think that's one of those things that should be toggle-able.
Long list of toggle options in your options menu. What notifications do you really want to hear about?
Considering the game spams you with plenty, even in multiplayer. Huh?
But even still, people were talking about hammer overflow and whether or not using a GE to get hammer overflow should happen or not. And I would definitely say no to that. Otherwise, you could mass spam GEs on a wonder and then mass overflow into an insane number of buildings after that with those great engineers. And yes, there is limitations to overflow hammers, et cetera, but there's also ways to mess with it to make sure that you get a ton of overflow hammers, even normally without, you know, doing GE rushes or anything like that. So
I don't know, man. The alternatives there. Like, I don't know if rushing out enough buildings is enough strength relative to just getting a scientist or something.
Yeah, well, it just depends on what you're doing. Like, if you really wanted the wonder, then
I guess. Okay. You could use it to rush out a bunch of units, too, potentially. So, yeah, you can't
Before
really...
Or you roll it over into another wonder.
Yeah, like, rush a wonder that you know is going to fail anyways, and then... Yeah, the next turn you hit the tech for the next wonder that you actually want, and you roll it right into that and get it instantly. Although that just seems like a waste of time, actually.
Like in multiplayer, for example, in terms of processing turns, the host has...
Yeah, host is God.
You know, short of that, I would think it would be a better way to go in the sense that kind of like it was in Civilization 4, where if a player was going to finish a wonder on the same turn as another player, whether it had great engineer anything or just quote-unquote straight-up build order, if you had the greatest overflow, then you're the one that got it. I mean, yes, absolutely, you should get the compensation like we're talking about, but in terms of deciding who is going to actually get that, it's a pain in the butt in multiplayer in particular because of that order.
It's still ordered. Single player has a different issue where your player won, so on turn X, the wonder hasn't completed yet, and you spam out an engineer to get it, and then it's still turn X when the AI does their turn, and they complete it, and then you get wah, 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 even though it's technically finished already on their previous turn. There is issues in there because I would say for fairness, if you want to do it that way, since the AI on turn X goes after you, if they had already completed it, then you shouldn't be able to GE rush it.
No, you should then be notified that don't waste your GE on this, because otherwise I would say, okay, then with the GE you should get it because most likely you're going to have the greatest overflow into that wonder.
Well, it depends on the population of the city and all that other stuff. Because GE gives you a flat amount plus a certain amount per pop, so you're not necessarily going to get the greatest overflow, especially if it's a later game wonder.
Colonel Mustard asks in the chat, what kind of consolation prize do we have for him, Johnny? One free ticket to Rage Quit.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll talk about his other complaint.
There's a similar rare situation where two players are each awarded a great profit on the same turn and are vying for the last remaining chance for a religion. Is it fair to award the religion to the person who essentially clicks through the belief choices but process the fastest and leave the player who spends great profit with nothing? When this happens, the slower player in this process loses his great profit and all the faith points spent on it and gets absolutely nothing in compensation.
This is a slightly different concept. This is a problem in the code. You can both get the profit on the same turn. That's all fine. And, of course, this is primarily for simultaneous turns. Obviously, if you're doing sequential turns, it won't matter. But if you're doing simultaneous turns, which is only a multiplayer thing, two people get a great profit, and the trigger for saying you've gotten this last religion isn't until after you've made all your choices and clicked the button. And I think the sad thing is, if you're both trying to make choices at the same time, it'll actually remove one. Like, if I pick a founder belief, you won't be able to pick it, even though we're picking it at the same time. It's more of a race condition than anything else. And the religion doesn't get chosen until after you hit found religion at the end of the process, which means what he's complaining about is the person who clicked through the beliefs and everything else the slowest loses their great profit.
I've never seen this
before. Oh, we see this all the time with pantheons because it's the exact same bloody thing.
Yeah, it's less common than a pantheon, but it's more egregious than a pantheon issue.
Yeah, definitely. Because pantheons have the exact same issue. Two people get enough faith on the same turn, and it's a click fest to see who actually gets the pantheon. At least in the pantheon case, you still keep your faith.
That's right.
So you don't actually lose it, but the cost for the next pantheon choice goes up. So you have to wait another turn or two. That's a click fest, but you don't lose anything out of it. Whereas in this case, they lose their profit. And the realistic answer is the trigger for founding the religion to block others in simultaneous turn mode should be when the first person clicks the great profit to found their religion. So when they press that UI button. That way, the other person, even though they got the great profit on the exact same turn, isn't screwed out of a great profit.
There are some tough tiebreaker things in Civ 4, too, but at least if you, like, bold philosophy first, you'd get the religion that turn. I mean, it's probably just an oversight, because it isn't that common.
Talca was asking about ideologies. Three factories are the modern era. Simple question. When you go for an ideology in Brave New World, do you prefer to go to three factories or you get one by hitting the modern era? He asked because in his recent game, he was doing the one city challenge and, of course, couldn't get enough factories to build it. So instead, he rushed into modern era by going scientific theory, electricity to radio. With using a great scientist in Oxford, he was in the industrial era for a grand total of 7 whole turns. He finished the industrial era without ever industrializing.
Short answer, prefer three factories. And that's why that's a pretty big reason why I don't prefer one city challenge, because that's obviously an issue.
Yeah.
If you happen to be a super, super science output empire and you have a great scientist on hold that you could burn to do the rush, three factories usually is a lot less time.
As long as you actually have coal.
Yes.
That comes up in the thread so much. People are like, oh, I don't have any coal. I can't afford to take it.
Yes, you can. There's a city state right next to you that's hostile and has coal. There, now you're bit.
Well, yeah, you could take them over. You could actually get the coal, you know, through allied status. Yeah. But
just had a couple of city states you were friendly with who would probably have coal.
But quite frankly, I actually think a better method, if you don't have coal, quote-unquote, yourself, you're not going to be able to get it through a city-state, and of course we're putting get in quotation marks there, AI tends to sell it really cheaply.
Yeah, see, there's been a few games where I've had to buy coal from AIs. And apparently they're not smart enough to say, hey, I don't have an ideology yet, I shouldn't sell all my coal.
And it is dirt cheap.
Well, it's not our fault that they undervalue coal.
Oh, yeah. Like cheap, like 1 gold per turn.
Thanks. I'll take your 22 coal. And now you can't get an ideology for another 20, 30 turns.
There's the other benefit for actually getting the coal from the AI. You know what? It's so good. There are times when I have coal natively and I say, hey, can I get your coal? Because I want to. That's for what Magin's saying. I'm sure there's going to be a threat. Dan, you're exploiting the game. Grr and arr. Yeah,
it's not like he doesn't already exploit it, but with the city states bullying them all the time. So, you know.
Nah. But the problem with city states, of course, is that they only get the tech if multiple civs have the tech, which means even if they do have coal and you see they have coal, even if they have a mine on it, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to give you coal because they don't have the tech for it yet.
That's why you go take them over.
I mean, I prefer the three factory route because I'm going to do the factories anyways. So it's theoretically faster because getting to industrialization is actually a straight beeline versus going up to scientific theory first and then into electricity and radio. But yeah, if you don't have coal or you can't find coal, then yeah, you're having issues. The modern era rush is actually more stable of a choice. It's just that the three factories is sufficiently likely that a better choice overall.
Like, tying back to what Mackie was saying before, like, if you are so far ahead in tech that you believe I'm going to be able to get to the modern era first before, say, another AI, at least an AI that I have contact with, is going to be able to get to the industrial era, in which case they will then know about coal to begin with, then yeah, okay, because then you're not going to be able to buy it off them. Because Even if you know about the coal and they don't know about the coal, it's like, oh my gosh, do you not recognize that this is black good stuff?
Yep. Also keep in mind, a lot of civs like to go to archaeology first, which means they didn't go to industrialization. Some will go to rifling first, which means no industrialization. So even if they're making it to the modern era before you, or deeper into the industrial era, they're still not going with that coal. I know somewhere in the thread is like, oh, there's nothing at radio. Well, no, electricity gives you aluminum, so you at least see where that is, and hydro dams. So if you're on rivers, that's a lot of nice production. Not to mention radio, there's some pretty sweet wonders sitting there. And hey, if you didn't go huge, there is that thought line of going towards the extra spies. Not to mention going into modern quickly means that you get an extra spy. So you can steal techs all the way up through archaeology and other along that line as well. So there's good reasons to go both. But for those people complaining about Venice, looking down thread and there was like, except for Venice, I go for three factories. What?
Yeah, you're able to buy what you want in your vassals' cities.
Mackie, there's just one thing about the thread that I am so surprised you didn't say. Well, of course Dan picked his top.
Because it has a poll, huh? Yeah, and it's 2/3 to 1/3 to 2/3 preferring the three factories. Who are you third people that are doing Modern Era Rush all the time? Do you always play Venice or an OCC or something?
I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that's what they're doing, or they are just so super, super duper awesome in technology. Seems to be them way too often, because this is a preference. I admit it's not an always thing, but why would you prefer to do this unless, yeah, you're kind of quote-unquote forced into it because of a one-city challenge, or you're so consistently far ahead in technology, maybe you should move up a difficulty level, something.
Another Hall of Fame space start. Let's do this.
Actually, I know the people who are mostly talking in the thread and saying it, but yeah, Modern Rush is so solid, and you don't have to worry about the randomness, but it's also getting into radio. Plus, you get, hey, scientific theory for more science. So science is God in the game, and if you go for the tech path that gives you mass science, you can get more science, among other things.
So in games where you're already on a huge science rush, pretty much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's most games at upper level anyways, so.
I feel important to point out and give thanks to both Mackie and Phil for voting in this poll since we started talking about it. And it's now actually slightly ahead of two-thirds. It's now 67%.
Oh, Phil, why'd you mess that up?
I knew someone was going to do that as soon as the poll result was mentioned.
Had to be done.
Yes. You know, you're still listening to Polycast 1.
Yeah, it even says who votes.
Yes, that's true. For what? No secret ballot here, I tell you what.
I admit I'm often tempted to vote for something unpopular just to troll, but this time I didn't do that.
And then that's the other thing. You could always use Oxford on industrialization, which is really, really, really easy. The only problem is that, yeah, if you don't have coal around or you have to wait forever to get the coal from somebody else, then you just wasted Oxford on a tech that didn't help you.
Person name undefeatable. How to culture. I know how to achieve a sub 300 turn SV, as I've done it many times, actually only three times. However, I don't know how to culture. I already had a hard enough time fitting the trade route stuff into my build strategy, so for the first couple of Brave New World games, I neglected to build any of the guilds ever. This kind of worked for a time, since most of the games I tried were to get an idea of the new mechanics on Prince, where the AI is a pushover, really. But I actually won a deity game as Poland, turn 292, ending with zero tourism and 42 culture per turn. That's horrible. I adopted the same ideology as a runaway Portugal. I had many unique luxes in the area to cover for unhappiness because of want for a new ideology. Solidarity made it so I could neglect culture with impunity. Seven free covers with a lot of culture, yeah, in the late game. You can't neglect culture, really. Tourism and then guilds in my next game. Babylon. Yep. So after all the failures, he asks, how do you maintain a decent cultural presence and still be ahead tech-wise? How do you find the time to build everything that's required? And essentially, how do you grow your cities after early warmongering and maintaining happiness?
Well, with culture, first thing, why you no build guilds?
Yeah. First thing, why you end after 290 turns only 42 culture per turn? That's horrible. Oh, my God.
What you want to do is stack your great people production, so National Epic and a garden and all the other stuff, into a singular city so that you can max it out and therefore get all of those types boosted rather than only one of them boosted.
Each one is more efficient that way.
Yeah. And frankly, if you're going culture, you're probably not going liberty. You're probably going to use tradition to get there, so you can do that in your capital and just get like insane growth if you have a lot of food. So that should easily cover all the ability to run all those specialists. If you're going liberty and not going for a culture victory, then I would definitely say you could spread the guilds around, because you still want to build them. You still want the culture and you still want the tourism, yeah. But you don't necessarily want to maximize the sheer number of them. Whereas if you're going for culture victory, you need to maximize the sheer number of writers and artists that you kick out.
And he later asks, how do you get tourism to rise enough for a culture victory? And he shows one of Imagine's YouTube videos. He had 850 tourism by turn 320. That's pretty good. And
actually, that was pretty crap. That should have been about 50 turns earlier.
Yeah, probably, but it's still good. I mean, the game, you can't really go up anymore. But
so, yeah, he was saying he couldn't get a tenth of that amount by turn 320. Well, yes, if you don't bake your guilds, of course you're not getting.
Yeah, you're not going to.
Guilds are a must for culture victory nowadays. You can't just build Monument. Well, in vanilla, it was Monument, Temple, Opera House, all that stuff, and then Gods and Kings was Amphitheater and all that stuff.
to get that high tourism, you do need the science to get up to interwebs so that you can double up your tourism.
If you use Pedro of Brazil, it's power, especially in the Golden Age.
Yeah, that's the thing.
We're using Pedro and you couldn't get enough culture?
I don't know. Maybe they were lack for some decent jungles. Not that that's necessary, but no. Still.
Well, but even so, your other great artists, you could even be stacking up the carnivals.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I don't want to beat on the guy because the switch to the new style of culture is a lot harder on the build plans and everything else. Well, at least at the higher difficulty levels, because you have to completely change how you do things. It's not just a build four cities, fall asleep, and see you in 200 turns sort of thing. So you have to do more work. Not to mention archaeology sites. You absolutely need to make those things landmarks, unless they're outside of range of a city. And if you are having big issues, then, you know, consider finishing exploration for those hidden landmarks.
Yeah.
Maybe if you're getting too much culture, you could always go steal their archaeological digs.
Yeah. Yep.
Or just go kill somebody and just take their works anyways.
All right. This is not culture, though, not domination. Come on now.
Yeah, hey, autocratic culture. Autocratic culture. I'm just going to take your stuff and make it mine.
Technically, all victory conditions are domination. There's cultural domination, scientific domination, and for time victory, it's like, I can't believe I put in this much time.
Right?
Time what domination!
Something else.
The other thing, of course, is to know how to play the mini game for creating all of those nice little boosted bonuses on the buildings.
Yeah,
the
make sure the museums are all themed.
Yep. Make sure everything's nicely themed. Finish aesthetics relatively quickly.
You can't
ignore science, and that's the thing. Unlike previous times with culture where you could effectively ignore science the moment you have enough culture buildings and whatever you needed for culture, as long as you don't get ran over or nuked. In this case, you can't ignore science because you do need to hit the info era for that big boost. Well, on higher difficulty levels. Pretty sure Emperor and below you don't need to go all the way to the info era because the AI is just not so good at it. So it's faster to get the early tourism.
That's the other thing. You can't forget about the tourism. You cannot forget about your cultural offense.
Yep. And picking the smart things. So any culture that comes from an improvement automatically gets converted into tourism later, but it has to be on the improvement, not on the just on the map and everything else like that. So if you're going to build a religion, then you sort of want to, you know, look at that. Of course, for Brazil, just take the jungle love and plow through social policies faster.
Oh my gosh, with religion, if you can position yourself to be able to construct at least one religious building, you know, like a pagoda or a monastery or a mosque, or if you can even stack them, and then if you go a little on the wide side and you go piety and get the Reformation sacred sites, you get two tourism from each one so early on in the game without doing much of anything else as far as tourism, that just helps set you up so perfectly. You don't even have to be going religion. I realized this, and I wasn't even going for a culture victory because, quite honestly, I don't like a culture victory, but even I like this. So if you're going culture, I'm not saying it's something that you have to do, but it is so sweet to help with that early offensive culture.
And I love how you completely forgot about the cathedral with the great work slot in it in that list.
I was just mentioning the ones that I thought off of the top of my head. It again goes towards I don't play culture victories.
But yeah, going that way. But that's the thing. There's so many ways to do it now. And of course, don't forget the World Congress. If you found a religion, make it the world religion. Don't forget your diplomats.
Yep. Isolate those civilizations that have not founded their own religion and spread your religion to them at the very least.
Yep.
So they're more likely to support your resolution to make it the world religion.
And then you'll get the tourism boost in your holy city.
That's right.
Which is also your wonder spam city and very likely your capital, realistically, at that point. But whatever. It's harder, I would say, to get a culture victory now than it was before. But that's mostly because you have to figure out how to change and deal with it.
You have to do something other than press and turn like 200
exactly.
times.
Exactly, yeah. It's not a passive thing anymore.
Yep. Unless you're playing Gandhi.
You know, and when he talks about, like, how do you find time to build everything that's required? Well, I don't see how I can produce these things. I don't have time to build the things I need. Well, you're going to need some production. There is some production things that you could buy for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Go get cash. Buy stuff. Food comes before hammers comes before gold because you have trade routes. So don't forget, grow. Constantly grow. Don't hit negative happiness for long and grow.
Add more growth to it.
Yep.
Yeah, it ties to, like, how do you grow your cities after early warmongering and maintain happiness?
Well, make sure you have the luxuries and the buildings and or religion and or ideology.
Well, it also says
don't go to war if you barely have any surplus.
Well, and be careful who you go to war with, right? Because there are probably those that you might want to exchange luxuries for or buy surplus luxuries from people. Got to be careful who you tick off and when you tick them off.
The other problem is you have to keep in mind different start plans. If you're going Brazil in a jungle, it is slow in the early game. It is a very, 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 very slow thing to do. So early warmongering in a jungle is not necessarily the best plan. Actually, it's pretty much a horrifyingly bad plan.
Better hope your jungle is next to a mountain range or some hills.
Yeah, if you're going to be in the jungle, go hug a mountain. That way, at least by the time you hit astronomy, you can throw an observatory in there at the same time.
Speaking of jungles.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle, Pedro sleeps tonight.
Oh, no.
Yes. Hey, Mackie didn't say no. She actually wanted it.
Oh, no.
Oh. Mega Bears fan went and built himself a website. He posted a strategy for Civ 5, Pedro, of course. Brazilian jungle king of Brave New World. I don't know if that's entirely true, but yeah, he's pretty solid in a jungle. He gets into a pretty lengthy discussion of different strategy bits. It's not too bad for the length of it, that is.
Well, the first half of it, at least, is just going over all the information we already knew about what Brazil does and some history.
Yeah, so he talks about the carnival and Brazilwood camp and Pracana. Where he gets into stuff, and where I guess the point of this being on the show is, and actually it ties directly into what we were talking about earlier.
No way! It's almost like it was planned or something.
Bad Dan, planning. So he talks about that Pedro in a jungle, of course, is a rough start, but you get a good payoff later. Basically, if you start in the middle of a jungle, you're not really going to have production, unless, of course, that there's something else there already, or you luck out and there's a hill that doesn't have the jungle on it at the time, or has, you know, gems or blah, blah, blah. Now, the thing is with that, and, you know, obviously you have the issue of having to go in and get to bronze working so you can chop that jungle before you can actually use it for anything. You do have benefit of that there is a lot of plantation-based resources in the jungle. Though, I mean, the problem with that is they have to actually chop the jungle first before using it, but most of them tend to give you more food. I mean, there's more money, obviously, so you can at least use money to purchase things before you actually make it at a plantation. But like citrus and bananas and other stuff like that will give you more food, which means you can at least have a cow level type tile around your starting spot, unlike all the other jungle that are two food and have plains underneath them.
A lot of the times you can quote unquote get away with if you have enough flat jungle that any hill jungle tiles probably going to want to at least, quote-unquote, sacrifice some of them for the production so you can actually realize Brazil's benefit later on.
Because otherwise you will have absolutely no production for the whole game. And you're going to have to struggle with using gold constantly if you don't actually chop out those jungles. But the thing is, what he doesn't get into is the sheer length of time it takes to chop down a jungle. Jungles are the worst tile on the map, taking upwards of 12 turns just to get it cleared and have something on it. And everything else is at least half that. Yeah, jungle starts are very, very, very rough. You will probably want multiple workers, more workers than you would normally do. And even if you're just doing a trading post in a jungle, it does take longer than in putting a trading post anywhere else. No early game wonders. Have fun with that. You will probably want to go tradition. Just saying. It's pretty solid because at least you can grow. And the more you grow, eventually you can just use specialists. Even unemployed citizens gives you more production than the jungle tile wheel. And I guess the most important thing to say is if you have 8 to 10 jungles around your capital, that's okay. You can use the rest of the tiles for everything else. If you have 20, 30 jungle tiles around your capital, it's going to hurt.
Pray for isolation.
Yeah, pray for isolation. Because if somebody else is around, like the Aztecs and the Iroquois, as he was talking about, you're going to be in trouble. Because you're not going to have the production to be able to deal with it necessarily.
Yeah, and by dealing with it, you mean, of course, fending them off. You don't mean rage quitting.
Yeah, anybody
can restart.
I'm just making clear.
yeah, don't forget happiness, et cetera, et cetera. Early carnivals, don't bother with, because early carnivals don't really help you too much. And of course, remembering that the carnival gives you tourism output plus 100%, and you get great artists, musicians, and writers faster. So that is one thing that you want to keep in mind, is that since the costs for the carnivals go up as you get them, or golden ages, then the earlier you get one, that's basically throwing away your big bonus. So you do want to delay some of those carnivals. And of course, once you're ready to go, you want to max happiness as much as you possibly can. But in the early, early game, don't trip into that carnival unless you really have to or have no other choice. So you can go unhappiness for a little bit. Just keep in mind that when you go unhappy, to reduce your path towards that carnival, that you're losing gold percentage and production percentage for every point below zero that you are. So it's not a great trade-off. It's almost worth just flipping into that carnival early, even if it's not going to help you too much, because frankly, losing multiple percents of production in gold and also the combat unit loss of strength is not really that nice. Love your jungles. Go Sacred Path if you have a lot of them. More culture is good culture. Get you through those social policies faster. And since all social policies are generally useful, you get through them faster, you might get other beneficial things like getting through exploration earlier if you're near the coast, or getting through commerce early if you're not near the coast. Because commerce, despite being not listed here, very solid if you're going to be in the middle of a bunch of jungle. Now, granted, you're going to be wanting to trade your trading posts in for Brazil wood camps, but commerce will at least give you more gold in general. And you might want to focus a bit more on gold on that respect.
Yeah, so not only to help out with, say, with purchasing some production buildings, but don't forget about your science.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be able to actually get to constructing wood camps before you die.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. If you're stuck in the middle of a jungle, the moment you can slap in universities, and this is where you want your money, the moment you get to education, if you have enough money to be buying universities, absolutely do that.
And that's where the food comes in, so you can actually work the science specialists.
Yeah. Well, not even that. Just all your jungle tiles get to science. So, yeah.
That too.
And if you get over to machinery and get your Brazil wood camps plus Sacred Path, then yeah, you're getting, what is this, 2 food, 2 gold, 2 science, 3 culture. That's worth having a jungle around. Of course, some of that comes later on after acoustics.
I can already see somebody saying, so does this mean you give us permission to do a later era start? No.
No.
Permission denied.
Because you're still going to be slow. he goes on to talk about using Sun God if you actually have a lot of bananas and citrus in the neighborhood. And that could be extra useful.
Oh, yeah. More food. Yeah.
Granary plus Sun God equals like insane amount of food coming out of there. Not to mention that you will lose some food from the citrus, because citrus in the jungle is worth 3 food right off the mark. So with a Sun God, it'll be 4 food until you plantation it, at which point you lose some of the food because the jungle's covering over the plains. But you do get production, so that's never a bad thing. Talks about Goddess of Love as good happiness generating pantheon, but it's not really. It's kind of like, eh.
Oh, yeah. Plus 1 happy for what, every 6?
Yeah, 6 pops. So you get 1. And then he talks about various other social policy choices and religion. And it's not a bad read. He gets into technology, though I would suspect that at the higher difficulty level, you're going to hit education, go into acoustics, so that you can open up rationalism right out the mark and then go back for machinery. He talks about going back and forth, but I guess it just entirely depends on what difficulty level you're running at. I would expect that education to acoustics and then back to machinery would work better. But just definitely don't forget your workshops and get that Ironwork National Wonder in as quickly as you possibly can.
Yeah, because there's some nice wonders that you could be constructing as well to help you out as Brazil. But if you don't have any decent production, well, might as well just whistle Dixie.
Yep. Or just mass engineers. He's not specifically talking about culture victory in this particular page. He's just talking more Brazil in general, though Brazil leans heavily on the culture victory. Talks about Proconas. If you want to use them later in the game, that's fine. You get Golden Age points from them, so that can push you into the carnivals. Keeping in mind that you don't gain Golden Age points while you're in a Golden Age, and including having for mass happiness, which seems a little annoying. So while you're in the carnival in this particular case, you might as well be at peace, because your Proconas are not going to help you in that respect. Though he does talk about going freedom, grabbing volunteer army for the 6 free foreign legions, and then you upgrade them to Procona, and therefore you get the foreign legion bonus for fighting outside of your territory, but still get the carnival bonuses when you upgrade them. If you don't happen to have jungles in your neighborhood, it happens a lot, just go find it. It's on the map somewhere.
or take into account everything else we've said with regards to Brazil.
Yeah.
It's not necessary to play as Brazil, although you're going to miss out on a lot of that is unique to Brazil. Culture is still possible. It's just to play Brazil as it's quote-unquote intended, you want to use at least a little jungle at some point in time.
He then starts talking about what to do with Brazil as an AI, so goes to the flip side of it. He talks about if you can propose the world games and Brazil's in the game, don't. Brazil's Carnival does help with that culture output.
Although, you know, they're going to have the production in order to be able to
get it, yes.
So there is that balance. So
yeah, they still have to win.
Know where they are, know the lay of the land, have an idea of, you know, where they are in the technology tree.
Or just smash them early.
Why do you always have to be so aggressive and go to that? I mean, you know, why can't we all just live as one?
Yeah, Pedro is not an AI that you want to leave alone forever.
That's true. At least knock him around a little bit. You don't have to necessarily eliminate him.
Yeah, no, if you can take out the capital and like smash up a couple extra cities so that he's basically been broken a bit, then it's okay to just leave Brazil in the corner and blatantly ignore him. But you may want to go in and burn all this stuff down every once in a while just to slow him down.
And take some Brazil wood camps for yourself.
Yeah, he goes on to talking about undermining Brazil is just to annoy them by chopping all their jungles. Just walk in with a bunch of workers and chop all their jungles, which is an entirely possible thing to do, because then you can go to war, not take a single city, and therefore not take warmongering penalties, but you can chop all their jungles, shoot up all their cities so that they want to give you a bunch of stuff, and then you can just take their money and gold and luxuries and all that and watch them do absolutely nothing.
So, hey guys, do you want more strategy from Mega Bears Fan? Because he also did one on Assyria.
Seriously?
The Assyrian Tech Thief. Yeah, you know, tip one, it's a very versatile sieve as long as you play aggressively. Well, yeah, you kind of have siege towers. If you're just going to sit back and do culture, this is not the sieve for you.
Unless you're trying to really handicap yourself.
Yeah. One of the issues you have with him being a tech thief is the other sieve has to have techs you haven't discovered for you to get any benefit.
Yeah, it's a nice benefit for Assyria, but it's not the more likely realizable benefit for Assyria, at least early on, because there is this point, and he kind of gets into where you can kind of coast a little bit when it comes to technologies in the sense that you go and you take other technologies, because once you get to the point of actually being able to construct these siege towers, then you go and you take cities.
Yes, and he had said in his guide that there was no way to check any screens to see if people had more techs than you, but actually you can look at the trade routes that people on other accompanying threads pointed this out, because if you're getting science from them, then that means they've got something you don't.
That's right, and you might think, well, whatever technology I can get is not really that important to me. Well, it's one less tech you have to research for yourself.
Yes.
So, take it.
Sit back, build up a few siege towers, some archers to go with them, let everybody else tech. You come along and say, hey, thanks for the research, yoink.
I also like how he talks about, quote, at first glance, the Assyrians may seem like they're geared exclusively towards two victory types, domination and technology, but this is absolutely not the case. It is Assyria I do find to be one of the more versatile civilizations, certainly as compared to Brazil, but not even just Brazil.
Yeah, you could actually do culture with Assyria by doing it later and letting the AI settle up all the places and then you just go take them. And then suddenly you have this big, huge empire which can output a crap ton of culture.
Royal libraries.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Siege
tower.
Well, to get you help started earlier is what I mean, for the culture part.
Yeah. You have to go up to Drama and Portrait before you can fill the thing.
Yeah, and?
Yeah, you're probably still going to be rolling over cities at Drama, so.
You're causing drama?
Yeah, I'm causing a great drama. The drama of, oops, now you're part of my empire. Thanks.
We are all drama monarchs here.
What the heck, Dan? Everybody knows the phrase is drama queen. You had to go for the gender neutral. Drama monarchs.
It's time to be politically correct.
No, we're just going for the Civ theme. And, you know, I gotta get the monarch in there. It sounds more Civ-like.
Interesting part where he talks about, think of your army as a second set of spies. If you use your army to steal superior Civ's technologies, then you can free up your spies to rig city-state elections instead. You'll also be receiving plenty of plunder from capturing cities and pillaging tiles, which will keep your coffers full of city-state bribe money, that is, if you're not demanding tribute from them. Both of these can make Assyria a viable diplomatic victory contender, but they still pale in comparison to Greece.
Well, everybody does, since Greece has city-state bonuses and loves to do patronage. Yeah, but also with this theory, because you're doing so much warmongering, you have to be sure that you're not meet everybody else before you're finished with the warmongering. If you're playing like on continents, conquer your continent, then go look for other people. Don't try to find everybody, because then everybody's going to go, you suck, you fight all the time.
That's right, this is not Civ 4, where they magically know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a thing. Just munch all the city-states near you. It's a good way to expand early in the game.
It's good for fiber.
Mm-hmm.
City-states are full of fiber, huh?
And you get techs. The only time you're not supposed to get a tech is if you already had taken it before. They get techs equal to when multiple people have it.
If they don't have the technology themselves, because multiple cities have gotten it.
Exactly.
It's not as likely if you take a civ proper. Although, of course, as is pointed out in the article, if they settle a city, you take it and you raise it, and then they settle it again, well...
Technically, it's not the same city. Well, it's very much not the same city, but...
Yeah.
Ha-ha. Yep. Yeah, I love the advice about playing in Syria basically boils down to you rage quit. Take it close enough to hit you, rage quit.
Yeah.
Well, with Syria early on, just... Target siege towers.
Sure.
Obviously, you don't want them next to your city, but don't even let them get near your city, because they can provide, of course, that combat benefit against cities, which include not just other siege towers, but other units, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beating up Assyria, just stop them early, and then they stop becoming a problem. If you can get past the siege tower time to the point where those are no longer useful, then NAI Assyria is pretty weak after that.
Yeah.
They're weak later on, assuming that they aren't maximizing all of the gains that they have. Because they don't want them to get to the point where they've rampaged over multiple civilizations, including city-states.
Oh, yeah.
And now have them up to be good in the later game because they use the early game to their advantage.
Yeah, no. My more logical point there is if you prevent them from expanding that way...
Yes, that's right.
...at the siege tower time, then they won't have a bigger empire. I mean, they still get the free techs and all that stuff later on, and they can still use normal units later on to get it. It's just that the siege tower is the thing that gives them a solid empire early in the game.
Yeah, so they don't get the snowball effect going.
Exactly. And you're right. If the later on, then, hey, if I capture a city and you have a tech, I get it. Well, you're going to have to be able to capture it.
Bonus.
You've negated the siege tower's benefit because they can't construct anymore. They're not on the map anymore. Otherwise, you're able to squash them. You're able to counteract them. Otherwise, then, yeah, no advantage later game in that case. So what you want to do with Assyria is you want to do a later game start. And no, you don't want to do that.
Yes, we know how you feel about later game starts, Dan. You love your stats, Dan. We can't get you to stop when you're given a bunch of stats.
I know. So there were 10 questions last year for people to respond for feedback on the show. The first question was about episode runtime, 60 minutes that we've been doing since 2011, where most previously 45 minutes. That was above, in a way, the first choice of most, actually followed by 45 minutes. So whether you're a relatively recent listener, or you've been listening for a while, those are the two choices that are consistent. And I think that's also consistent as well, because, I mean, 60 minutes, 45 minutes, if you're a consumer of media, particularly television, these times are going to be familiar to you, either because you record something off TV and something goes 60 minutes, or you're watching something off of a DVD, or you get rid of the commercials, and then it is essentially 45 minutes worth of content. So that makes sense. That didn't surprise me at all. I don't think that surprises anyone here. What did surprise me, and this was much closer in the next question, about whether we should record essentially every other week or every week. The options to record monthly or quarterly were absolutely blown out of the water, thankfully. actually, recording every other week was slightly preferred to being recorded weekly, so maybe it's sinking in that you actually don't want us to record every week, because too much of a good thing is not a good thing anymore.
You might get co-host rights if you try to do this every week.
Yeah.
Well, there's also that too, and then in which case there would be no episodes. We wouldn't even make a quarterly quota, so... Other than quarterly quota being alliteration, there's really nothing good about it at all. The biggest surprise, I have to say, right now actually came from the third question, which was listed all the segments that were considered for inclusion for Polycast in 2013, and then I marked those that were specifically included. So for the first time in one of these, I talked about essentially segments that even though we thought we might do, we didn't include. The two that were not included at all last year were Time Machine, where we look back at key moments in Civ history, and Community Focus, which highlighted a specific segment of the community, which we actually only did in Season 6 so far. Both of those did not even get 50% of the votes, which, considering the fact that there wasn't any last year, might be kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I'll also talk about self-fulfilling prophecies in a little bit. What did surprise me is that the Senate segment, which we debate game strategy, was not the most common response. It was the second. Yes, a strategy podcast. It was one vote short of Forum Talk, where we investigate hot issues raised in Civ community forums. But I must admit, I was surprised that on a strategy podcast, 75 respondents, by the way, 67 mentioned Senate, and 68 people talked about Forum Talk. News was next, and Research Lab and Interview, Open Mic, yes, Open Mic, imagine that, and Theater, where we share recent Civ gameplay experiences, all received at least 50% of the vote. The other one was Miscellaneous, that which does not fall into any other category, received less than 50%, and quite frankly, there's a lot of miscellaneous things we do on this show, so that's kind of a catch-all segment. That's really not going anywhere. That's kind of a default segment when I can't figure out, you know, what other segment to put something in. Quickly on the next couple, how would you rate Polycast on passion, showing excitement in what is being said? By far and away, the most common response was excellent, 8 out of 10, followed by 9 and 10 were the second and third most popular responses, so yay. As for connecting with the show's audience, so this was dialogue, the most popular responses were 8, 7, and 9. So in all of these cases, the first three responses for both of these questions were 60% or more of all responses. As for the content, design, and functionality of the Polycast website, the most common response was 6, followed by 7 and 5. So, everyone's a critic. I talked about self-fulfilling prophecy. A mixed coverage of Civilization IV, Civ V, and Civ series in general is an ongoing effort on Polycast. What do you feel that balance should be in 2014? And for the first time, Civilization V was the focus, number one. The forum that I most often people know that the survey existed in Civ community forums was in a Civ V forum. So those two things combined probably does not surprise anyone, that with the fact that, you know, Civilization V is also a newer title, that Civilization V coverage primarily was the most common response. But what did surprise me is that Civ series in general secondarily beat out Civilization IV secondarily for the most popular response. So 33 people would rather see us talk about the Civ series in general before we talk about Civ 4 anymore, as opposed to the 30 who said, no, talk about Civ 4 after Civ 5 and then the Civ series in general.
Well, Civ 4 is part of the Civ series, so.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, splitting hairs a little bit when we talk about, yes, the Civ series in general. Next question asked about what people thought we should use to promote Polycast. Did you know that the Civilization community forums was the most popular response, where 92% of respondents says that we should use that?
Is it because you posted that in a Civilization community forum?
What?
98% of our referrals to the Polycast website come from Civ community forums, Civ fanatics in particular, yeah. Given their traffic. Surprise, surprise. The next most popular response was actually YouTube, which I always enjoy because YouTube, which is really not a service intended for audio only anything, static images over audio clip. Love it. Followed by Twitter. Yes, we are on the Twits. But none of the other responses, either talking about the publisher forum, going onto Facebook, RSS feeds, Ustream, or Google+, all of those received less than 50% of the vote. But yes, we do also promote on the publisher forum, the 2K forum, use RSS feeds, and yes, it's promoted on Ustream too, but not Facebook or Google+. And then, of course, comes to the only reason anybody listened to any of these other statistics was so we could actually get to the last two questions, I'm sure. We asked, here are the usernames or names of guests who appeared on one or more episode of Polycast in 2013. Tell us the ones you would like to return in 2014. If not, do not check any. And out of the 75 people who actually gave us responses, 47 answered. So 47 wrote down at least one. So that was 28 that did not check any.
So 28 votes for none.
Well, to tie this actually into some, one person had indicated that, well, I can't remember who the heck these people were, so it made it difficult to check off.
Yeah, if you'd asked them right after they listened to the episode, they might have had an opinion, but months later, who?
And I can understand that. He was a custodian V131. He said, in future, I'd maybe think you ask about whether or not people think we should have guest co-hosts. And if so, how many should we have on a typical episode and how often? And I think we'll consider that for future years. But of course, people who were guests on the show in a previous year want to know, you know, if they have bragging rights or not. It was a tie for first between Ed Beach and Dennis Shirk.
Oh, I'm so shocked.
Oh, really?
Not again. Well, no. Okay. Outside of the Phyraxians, which are a rare thing.
No surprise. They have a Phyraxian on the show and people want them back. I don't know why that could possibly be.
Aw. So what did they get for votes? How many?
They each got 29.
Oh, so they barely beat out the none of the above.
Start looking at the glass half full, not the glass half empty.
I'm just putting it in perspective. They did at least beat none of the above.
The people who actually checked off at least more than one, again, they had 62% of the responses. The person who was in second and second by themselves had 38% of the responses. And that's 38% of the 47 that checked anything. And so second place goes to Kamikaze, who was on episode 187.
He cheated.
Oh, is that?
He's a CFC content admin.
Hey guys, vote for me.
I'm actually glad you said that, Imagine, because we can remember that when we talk about the results to the next question.
Speaking of cheaters.
In third place was a tie between the Chris D and Kaya.
Aw, Monkey didn't get second place. I'm sad.
Well, he hasn't been on in a while.
Those were the top three. I'm not going to mention anybody else specifically other than to say the lowest votes were 5 out of the 47. So there wasn't anybody that, you know, that just got one person checking it off. So
yeah. Now, see, if I was cheating, I would have won that one, too.
You're not a guest.
That's right. Like when you joined the regular panel.
You were ineligible for guest votes.
That's right. It's superseded. I wasn't going to put you in both. Are you kidding? Especially when I didn't put myself there.
I could have hacked it. Right in campaign. Here you go.
So then, 10th question. Below are those who served as Polycast regular co-hosts during 2013. Who is your favorite? And we first did this survey in 2011. Phil won that. Last year, Imagine won, and yeah, Imagine you won again.
What?
You had 38% of the vote.
Oh, that's actually not bad then.
After 2 years of coming in second place, I am now in third place. Congratulations, Mackie. You beat me out by one.
Yay, Mackie!
Oh, man, Dan.
24% of the vote, and I had 23%. But, you know, you're the only woman on the internet, so I can't stay mad at you.
Yeah. I thought we were there 2014 without that joke. Well,
so close.
Didn't last long. You won 3 days. You made it 3 days.
Whole episode recording without it, Mackie. Just hold on to that tightly. Thanks to everyone who voted in the poll. Again, there were 75 respondents. We actually had 81 previous year, so I was kind of surprised by the slight dip, but it's negligible. It's certainly better first year when we had about 8 responses or something like that. And there was also, again, some general feedback in the threads on CFC about it, and I already talked about that. There was one other thing. Custodian V131 also said, you know, big thanks to the team for putting all, you know, all this work in. And then S8G said, I second the problem of not remembering the names of your guests. General feedback. As someone who was only listening to the show for a year or so, I sometimes don't know what you're referring to. For example, when you're talking about problems in Civ 4's design like Vassal States, sometimes your message is, oh no, don't bring these back. But I, as someone who hasn't played Civ 4 or Civ 3 that much or that deeply, don't know what the problem precisely was.
So we need to have a special educational thing about what Vassal States thing was a pain in the ass.
I guess there was a time where we would summarize it in a sentence or two after going into excruciating details for years, and I guess we've even dropped the sentence summary. I suppose we could make a more concerted effort to mention that. Phil, I'll just blame Phil.
It's all Phil's fault.
It would be nice if you could revisit some topics from time to time. Civ 5 has been out for over 3 years, and I think it attracts new players on a regular basis. But when I try to listen to old episodes, there's a lot of talk about problems that are not relevant anymore. Alternatively, you could bring best of episodes or lists or something like that. Number one, you shouldn't encourage me in lists.
Yeah.
I was about to say, really? You mentioned lists in Dan.
Probably do that. I mean, we did that with Civilization 4, where we went, hey, remember when we talked about this before Beyond the Sword expansion? Hey, let's talk about it now, post Brave New World. It's not a bad idea.
yeah, because there's quite a number of mechanics that got changed or just outright tossed in one or two cases. But yeah, now with Brave New World more settled and after having a fall patch, especially vanilla mechanics that we talked about a very long time ago, I think most of those have been changed.
I like how Imagine uses we as in, you know, the royal we. And speaking of Imagine, he also says, and sometimes it would be helpful if you include references to other games you're playing. I know Imagine plays a lot of... and I like to know how it changes the perspective on Civ. We talk about Minecraft. That's the only other game I'm really playing other than Civ. I'm assuming no one counts audio editing as a game, right? So I can't...
No.
Definitely not.
Hey, there is a game about developing games now, so I'm just waiting for the game where you play editing audio. It's going to happen. It's going to be on Kickstarter this year. Mark my words. Or don't. I don't care.
Speaking of EU, I've logged like 117 hours of that in the past week and a couple days.
Yeah, and if you play the multiplayer of it, suddenly Civ 5 multiplayer doesn't seem so bad.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
I think Dennis needs to be brought in there. We have a clip of that, right?
Actually, what are you referring to? I'm trying to remember.
Remember, what's her face?
yes, well, exactly.
I do. I was behind her in the story yesterday, Imagine.
The face you remember.
No, that interview between Dennis and, or with Dennis and Ed and, oh, crap.
Oh, man.
When they did the live stream.
Oh, Kate. Oh.
Yeah. Where Dennis turned around and said, well, you're doing it wrong.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, I do remember. Yes, Kate was asking. I don't remember what her question was about, but I do remember Dennis saying that. Okay.
Yeah, this is getting less funny all the time.
You were talking about when Dennis did something. Dennis being the, for people who are wondering who the heck we're talking about, Dennis Shirk, lead producer at Brave New World. I thought you were talking about, you know, when Dennis was doing it wrong. And I'm like, I was confused.
Okay. Now that we're clearly off the rails.
A little bit. Thank you for listening to episode 190 of Polycast. The regular panel will continue to move forward to episode 200 because, you know, there are four of us. After me, there's Mackie.
I'm still in pain from the puns right now.
So much in pain she didn't even realize I just made another. The me and team.
And we're off to another year, listeners.
Imagine.
What she said.
And our returning guest, Silent Night 13.
Thank you guys for having me. Hope to be on a little bit more this year.
Right, we need a Phil impersonation. Okay, here we go. I approve.
Something about nukes. Blah, blah. Close enough.
Blah, blah, blah. Worm nukes. Blah, blah, blah. I approve. Blah, blah, blah. Some random joke.
Oh, it's Phil.
Holy crap.
Is that how people usually... Phil says hi to someone and people are like, holy crap.
I'm sorry. For some reason, I thought this was next week. I'd get back to the computer here.
Yeah, I wouldn't have known except I turned on Skype on my Kindle because I was thinking there was something this weekend, but I couldn't remember what it was, and I saw that, and I was like, oh, right.
You see, I'm the good co-host. I actually went and checked to figure out if there was a topic list.
I need to play a game with him again. It's been a while.
And somebody's just pounding on their keyboard, Mackie.
I'm not pounding. What?
Sounds like you're just beating the crap out of it.
This mic is apparently very sensitive for when I need to type.
I feel like editing part of what Imagine said and just have him say multiplayer was forgotten.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Well, no.
The Great Prophet. Yeah. So what's that, Phil?
This.
All right, hang on.
Because Phil's introducing the topic, so.
Yeah, go Phil. Go Phil. Go Phil.
No, feel free. You're on a roll.
It's not your birthday. It's not your birthday. But talk anyway. But talk anyway.
So I think here we can go back to what Dan was saying about how he was going to cut down what Majin said. It's just mm-hmm. They ignore multiplayer.
You're screwed in multiplayer.
Man, that's harsh.
But most of them tend to give you more food or more, you know, food.
Wait. You say that sentence again. Hang on. I'm trying to follow.
There's a possibility that they could also yield more food.
Yeah, so sure. Assure the money ball, I can't say it right. The Assyrian tech thief.
You have to make sure everybody else likes you.
Or just slaughter anyone who doesn't.
Exactly. Just saying. Dan might have.
We're all here. What are you talking about?
You want to run that bias again, only in English? Record date January 4th, 2014. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.